G'day folks, and welcome to Stick With It, APA's podcast for its pilots. Today's episode is a follow-up to our first ever episode relating to FRMS. There were plans to bring this to you earlier in the year, however we were waiting for some clarification from the company regarding the differences between operational and planning limits. That FSO relating to short-haul operations was released recently. Unfortunately, myself and Greg Pavlo just haven't had our calendars aligned to talk more about that. So what we're going to do is give you parts of the chat that we recorded back in August about FRMS, particularly around the issue of going fatigued and what you can expect and some different scenarios to discuss. And then in the new year, Greg and I will get together and we'll have a bit more of a chat about operational and planning limitations, and we'll bring you part three of the FRMS podcast to you then. In the meantime, please enjoy what we've got for you here. Have a great Christmas and a prosperous 2023. I'd now like to explore, one of the challenges relating to this when regarding what happens when you call in fatigued. And we'll look at three different phases of flight: before a duty, during a duty, and after a duty, but prior to the next duty. So let's start with the first scenario. You've got a gorgeous two-year-old baby in the house who normally sleeps like a rock star, but they've started teething, and last night they didn't sleep a wink, and neither did you, and you've got a 5 a.m. sign on for a four sector day. What should you do, and what should you expect to happen from a company perspective?
I've got an older child. I had this happen to me the other day.
Okay.
I've used it in recent times a few times, but at 2 a.m. I hadn't been to sleep. I had early the next morning, exactly the scenario you're talking about. I ran crewing at 2 a.m. because I knew I wasn't going to get sufficient rest for the next day. I explained to them that I hadn't slept because of the child and that I was unfit to operate the next day. And they just removed me from the pattern as if it was normal sick leave. What you can expect is that you'll be removed from the pattern and you'll be required to fill out a fatigue report. Then it's just like normal sick leave. It comes out of your normal sick leave balance.
So basically it's personal leave.
Personal leave.
Yep.
And the difference between calling fatigued and calling sick, mm-hmm. or to use personal leave, is that you only need to fill out the fatigue report if you call in fatigued, so you don't need to get a doctor's certificate or a statutory declaration. The other aspect to calling in fatigued, if it lasts for more than 48 hours, then you need a DAMI clearance to come back. If you call fatigued. Now, if it's a transitory, you know, the baby's not sleeping, then, you know, within a day or two, you should have had the opportunity to recover.
And my understanding is that you will get a call from your base manager, which everyone suddenly thinks that, you know, that's trouble. But my understanding is it's really just a welfare check just to make sure you're okay. Is that a fair assessment?
That's a fair assessment. And I have had that phone call, and it was during a where I went fatigued during a duty,
mm-hmm.
and the phone call from the base managers was just to see whether I needed a taxi home and if I was okay, and that was the extent of the phone call. So you shouldn't feel apprehensive about getting that call from the base manager.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about to find out if there are any issues that they need to address.
Right. So, and we'll talk about it now. So basically, if you call in fatigued or you call in sick, in terms of credit hours and all the applicable things to your roster, it's basically the same.
In short haul, correct, yes.
Yeah, it's same in long haul. It's treated just like sick leave. It's something that the pilot FSAG reps tried to have changed. We have suggested that there should be a measure of fatigue leave. And that might not apply when you've had the baby the night before. That's really a personal problem. That's not a Qantas problem. But when you've got a roster that isn't working for you from a fatigue level, we've argued that we should have a category of fatigue leave.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we haven't been able to convince management of that. So, yes,
we'll call that a work in progress.
That's a work in progress.
Okay.
Not much progress for that work, but we'll keep trying.
So I guess what we're trying to get out here for crew is I think there's an apprehension about calling in fatigued, and people think that the easier option is to call sick. But obviously, can you explain to us what are the benefits of people calling in fatigued?
I'd say there are two benefits. One is for the individual pilot, you don't then have to go and get a doctor's certificate or other paperwork to certify that that leave, you can just fill out a fatigue report. More importantly, however, it logs into the FRMS system the issue that you raised. Now, if it's the baby at home, maybe not so much, but if it's something to do with your roster or a particular pattern, then that will go to the FSAG, your report that you submit as a result of going fatigued will go to the FSAG. It will get looked at by our FSAG reps, and we can start to build a history across the entire pilot body and start to identify areas that are causing fatigue. And the advantage of that is that through the FSAG, we can then address what factors are causing the problem and address it. So you don't need to call in fatigue next time because the pattern or the roster has been fixed.
So, Shane, why do you think there's been a reticence of pilots to call fatigue?
I think it depends somewhat on circumstances. I am aware when pilots have thought maybe I shouldn't go to work and they ring crewing and, you know, I haven't heard this in recent times, but we certainly had some instances in the early stages for crewing, you know, we're going to have to cancel the service. Well, crewing shouldn't put that kind of pressure on a pilot, and a pilot shouldn't put that pressure on themselves either. If you don't think you can safely conduct the flight because you haven't had adequate rest, you've just got to call. It's a hard call, but it's the only call. The other part is filling out a report. Okay, that is a bit of an inconvenience. The Intellex reports aren't the most user-friendly pieces of paper that we'll see.
But if people follow our how-to guide, they're much easier.
Absolutely, yes.
Plug there.
So, but what pilots will often say is, what's the point of reporting? Because nothing ever happens anyway. And Greg alluded to reports going to FSAG. Without those reports, you're not going to see change. So while the pilot filling out the report, you might not see an immediate change. But I assure you that for reps like us, meeting with Qantas management, without those reports, we're turning up to a gun battle with a water pistol.
Yeah, and it seems to me as well that if we all know, you know, the FRMS aspect of the Project Winton is significant, so clearly, dare I say it, we've got a little bit of time for everyone to just get into that headspace of being comfortable going fatigue, comfortable submitting fatigue reports, and just increasing the overall reporting culture is obviously going to assist us when we get to that point in the evolution of the airline.
You raise a valid point with Winton and that type of operation. I agree entirely. The key thing there is it's something new. We won't have operated an aeroplane like that over sectors of that length with the crew compositions being envisaged. It's new. We're doing Nandi return operations. We haven't done much of that sort of thing before. So anytime something is new, it is likely to have some teething problems. Your reports become even more important. If we were to find that on, let's say, 25% of our Nandi trips, that crews were finding they couldn't complete the duty inside the expected tours of duty, it's creating fatigue, we can do something about that. And that might be as simple as getting another pilot put on the aeroplane so you've got an opportunity. So anything that's new is where you are most likely, of course, to find adverse consequences. But reports are equally as important. We've been doing 2 and 3 pilot back-of-clock operations from Asia for a long, long time. Without reports continuing to identify that there are ongoing issues, we won't affect change.
Okay. So the next scenario I like to look at is that you've slept okay, but not amazing, but you felt good enough to operate the planned pattern when you started the day. Turns out the aircraft has a bunch of MELs, including a broken autothrottle, and after 2 busy sectors, last night's lack of sleep is starting to catch up with you, and there is 1 long sector to go. Now, I want to preface this question by acknowledging that the majority of us soldier on to try and keep the show on the road, avoid disruption, and not inconvenience our fellow crew member or members. And this issue brings into play the wider question of how do we assess our own fatigue state in real time. But just putting that aside to one moment and assuming that we decide we need to stop flying due to fatigue, what options are available to us and to our members in this case?
Again, it's a matter of same as an illness, mid-duty. It's just a matter of making the decision. And it's a hard decision to make because, as you said, a lot of pilots consider the pilot they're flying with that they may lose hours, They consider the passengers, they consider the disruption. But if you're not feeling fit to operate, you need to make that decision. The best thing to do is notify the company as soon as possible. So you might do that. We've got in-flight Wi-Fi connectivity now. You might call the IOC and let them know.
Mm-hmm.
You may send an ACARS message telling, you don't have to be getting into too much detail, just be aware ACARS can be intercepted by the public. So just the captain will be removing himself from duty at the end of the flight, or some other method to advise crewing as quickly as possible that you'll be standing yourself down. So once you've notified the company, it all happens pretty automatically. So they'll then swing into action. They'll try and recrew the flight with another captain, move people around, or call someone out from reserve. From your point of view, you'll land at your destination, or if you're already at your destination, your duty is finished. Now, they may do one of a number of things. They may send you to a hotel because there's no flights to come back home on. They might immediately pax you on a flight. So this happened to me recently, along 3 or 4 days, and on the last day, I was supposed to operate up to Brisbane and then back to Sydney. It was the third and fourth sector of the day. On the way up to Brisbane, I decided that I couldn't continue past Brisbane.
Mm-hmm.
So I called the IOC in flight, advised them once we arrived into Brisbane, I couldn't operate further. What happened then was they crewing swung into action. That was the last I heard. I was just told, we'll pax you back on the same flight. So they swung into action. They got a replacement crew member who then operated the flight back with the FO that I had been flying with, and I paxed home on that trip.
And as you said before, your base manager called you to see if you wanted a taxi home.
Yeah. So once I landed in Sydney, my base manager called me, asked how I was doing, and he said the purpose of this phone call is just a welfare check,
mm-hmm.
and to see if you need transport home. In that case, I managed to get a bit of shut-eye on the flight back, and I felt okay to drive home, and I decided to drive home.
Okay. So then the last scenario I've got is, you know, after completing a pattern. So domestically, you may have flown day 3 or 4 early starts and feel fatigued. You believe that even with an good night's sleep, you won't have recovered in time to be fit and ready for work in the morning. Shane, what options do you have there?
It's much the same. You've got to make that call. You've got to advise crewing. And crewing will look to what are reasonable alternatives. I mean, if it's at your home port, well, that might be the end. You go home. You might be down line, and maybe they suggest a different duty for the following day. Instead of an early start, maybe they can find a way to make it a later start.
Mm.
And if you feel that with that later start, you'll be able to achieve decent rest, then great. There is nothing wrong with crewing proposing reasonable alternatives. But ultimately, the pilot assesses that and says, that will work from a safety perspective or it won't.
Yeah, and I can give I had a scenario when I was on the 7-3 as an FO. I had 6 days in a row, which are early starts. 4 in a row were 5 a.m. starts, and then the 5th and 6th day was 6:05 a.m, so they technically didn't classify as early starts. And the 5th day I did, I think it was a Brisbane return out of Adelaide, and I then went to the supermarket afterwards, and having walked up the same aisle 5 times looking for the one item was the point I realised that I was cooked. And literally pulled out my phone, made a phone call, and the trip went away the next day.
Yeah, and I think the reluctance to make that call, it feels like a big call at the time when you're in mid-pattern or there's a duty the next day. It does feel like a big call sometimes. But what you'll find is when you actually make that call, you realise that it's not as big as what you think it is.
Hmm.
Aeroplanes and pilots get delayed and cancel, you know, flights get cancelled all the time. So this is no different from, you know, a maintenance issue that results in your flight being cancelled or any number of other things that disrupts a day's flying. So you don't need to feel like it's a big call. Just make the call, let crewing know, and they will just remove you from the duty, and you submit the paperwork, and that's the last you'll hear of it in most cases. You might get a call from your base managers just to seek further information and check you're okay, but that's generally it. It's no different to going sick, as we've discussed before. But you've got to be willing to make that call.
So we need to recognise that we all know it, academics know it, fatigued people do not perform the way they you would normally expect them to. That can be cognitive effect, it can be physical effect. Fatigue affects performance. That's why we have rules around flight and endurance, why we have an FRMS. That's why it's a simple choice for a pilot. If you're tired and you can't find the stuff you're looking in the supermarket, you know that's not your normal level of cognitive performance. Mm. That is telling you something. If you're still having some problems figuring out, is this reasonable or not? If you choose to, no obligation whatsoever, but in DocuNet, under the fatigue tab, there is a document called the fatigue self-assessment.
Mm-hmm.
That just gives some ideas about, you know, how much sleep you've had in the last few days. You know, it's just a logical guide. It is only a guide, as it's called. But if you're thinking, oh, maybe I should be okay, you might actually go and look at that guide and say, heck, you know, this is showing to me that I'm right there in that caution area and you need to be careful. So recognise it is a real risk and be sensible with the decisions you make.
Okay. Now, the other scenario I just wanted to look at was sort of more of an international scenario, so for our international operators, where you could be staying in a hotel and it's on a Saturday night and there's a wedding in the hotel and guests are carrying on in the hallway until the early hours, and despite numerous calls to reception, you cannot attain sufficient rest, and call time is at 9 a.m. What options do you have in that case?
Same deal. If you're not going to be fit, you're not going to be fit. The only thing that changes is how do you communicate that decision?
Given our pilots are all conscientious, they want to try and operate. Are they going to be concerned about the implications of them going sick? Can we at least get a bit of an idea, though, what sort of things will crewing try and do in the example of you going sick upline internationally?
So obviously upline is more difficult than we're in Australia and we've got, you know, pilots around all the bases we can call off a standby. It is obviously more difficult upline. But really, that doesn't make any difference to your decision. You're either fit to operate or you're not. And if you're not fit, it might throw some chaos into the system. You know, maybe they're planning to do four pilots, maybe three pilots. Okay, that depends on the tours of duty. There are numerous things that crewing and the IAC could attempt. They can delay a service to allow you to get more sleep. They delay the service until they've got a pilot that's in port currently to get enough rest so that that pilot can be fit to operate. They're all inconvenient, but we run a whole team of people in scheduling in the IOC to deal with disruptions. We don't make the decision lightly, but if it needs to be made, we must make that decision.
Because it comes back to the notion our obligation is to be not fatigued when we report for duty.
Absolutely. Fit for the planned tour of duty.
And in fact, crewing in most cases won't actually say anything to you about what impact it will have. Well, they shouldn't say anything to you. Once you call in fatigue, they'll just thank you, they'll let you go, try and get some sleep, and then they'll deal with the consequences. And this is one of the problems with pilots and why so many are reluctant to call fatigued, because they're concerned about the consequences to the operation, because we are professionals and we do want to get the job done. Mm. But the problem isn't pilots calling in fatigued. The problem is getting pilots to call in fatigued when they're not fit to operate. And so I think Shane said it, the consequences of doing that are not an issue for you. If you're not fatigued, if you're too fatigued to operate, then what impact that has down line is not something that you should impact your decision as to whether you turn up or not.
Okay, I think that's really good advice. Now, just quickly, I'm assuming in all of the above scenarios we've been discussing about, basically an intellect's fatigue report needs to be submitted. Now, as you said, if you've just gone fatigued, but, you know, right at that point you need to put your head down, what's the time frame where they normally want a fatigue report to be submitted? Is there a preference? Is it within 24 hours or is it sort of just basically when you're fit and able to put in a report that makes sense?
It's a great question that you ask, because I've just pulled up an email I received, and this is probably something our members will get when they do call in fatigued. So on this occasion, I called in fatigued. I received an email from flight operations. It basically was an email that copied in my base manager.
Mm-hmm.
It outlined the details of my fatigue issue, and there was a link there that said that to report in via Intellex within 48 hours. So they will follow up with you with an email in most instances and ask you to report and give you the information that you need to fulfil the requirements.
Okay. Now, and as again, a reminder, with the Intellex how-to guide is attached to this link. The other thing to remember, though, is that we need, at APA, we need you to forward the confirmation email you receive after submitting that report. Please send that confirmation email to frms@apa.org.au, and that allows us to have a look at it before basically an FSAG meeting and just to keep track of them. I know, and I'd also like to acknowledge that Greg endeavours to respond to your emails within 24 hours. However, as our members respond to the call of improving our collective reporting culture, I know Greg is receiving more and more emails every day. So please be patient if it takes him a few days to get back to you.
Thanks for that, Mark.
Now, I'm aware that the buzzwords around FRMS are that it's data-driven, science-based, etc. Therefore, in theory, the rule set should be evolving documents. So since the long-haul and short-haul rule sets were first issued in February 2019, there have been two revisions of each document. Now, I understand the pandemic occurred during this time frame, but I guess my question is two revisions in 3.5 years indicative of an evolving document, or do changes happen more subtly around the actual rule sets? I'm just curious, is there an accepted time frame for how the document changes? Or, as well, because we need greater reporting, has there not been enough reporting to actually evolve the document?
You're right, it's an evolving system, but there aren't any rules about what pace evolution is supposed to take. But what needs to happen, as significant risks are identified, steps can be put in place. We have to continue to update this. An example, I referred to the FSO a little while before. That's the interim measure. So it is a change to the FRMS. It just hasn't got into the manual yet. You know, like all manuals, there's quite a lot of changes. Some of the changes we've had have had 20 or 30 changes. Some of those will be small, some more significant. So what matters is not so much what revision of the rule set we're looking at, but is your FSAG, is the FRMS as a whole adapting as it needs to at an appropriate speed. That will be driven by reports, as you say. If we're identifying risks, we have to take steps. Could be FSO, could be straight into a rule set change.
Okay.
Can I just add to that as well? There are risk factors that are identified through reporting, and quite often they're addressed through a policy change. So there are also the FRMS initiatives which are available under your document under the FRMS tab,
okay,
or the fatigue tab, and they will introduce measures prior to doing a revision to the rule set as a trial to see how they affect your fatigue outcomes.
Okay.
So there are changes occurring all the time, irrespective of whether the rule sets are actually released in a new revision.
Okay, cool. Now, before we finish, as a reminder, we're aware that there's the new EFF fatigue report that's been introduced by the company, and it's designed as a gathering or data gathering tool. It's important for our members to be aware that at this point, APA doesn't need that report to be forwarded to us. We're still just interested in when you submit an Intellex report, that one you are encouraged to forward to us as an email to frms@apa.org.au. Now, before we finish, Shane and Greg, do you have anything else that you would like to add?
So I'll just summarise things we've already talked about. It is a safety decision whether you continue to operate or not. It is not an industrial decision. You will make the decision on fatigue grounds. If you have roster changes, you need to be sure you understand how that has happened. That is how you make sure that you are complying with the regulations. That is protecting Qantas and yourself by not unwittingly stepping outside of the rules. So if you get a change, you can't figure it out, contact crewing, have them explain, and if you are not happy that it meets the regulatory compliance or you are not fit to operate, then do not accept the change.
Okay, Greg.
I'd like to add that with the dynamic nature of the environment, we've got a lot of new people within the organisation. You need to keep an eye on your own, not only your fatigue levels, but also make sure you're compliant. A few things that we've noticed that have become an issue in the last several months are that the length of duty that you can operate to depends on when you sign on for two pilot operations, so keep an eye on that,
mm-hmm,
depending on what time you sign on. Also, keep an eye on your duty time, because the what's reflected on your roster on the day of operations may not be realistic. So have a think about what you're actually doing that day. And if it's showing you a 20-minute turnaround in Melbourne during peak hour, that's probably not realistic. So apply some common sense and look at a real what you think would be a realistic turnaround time and see if you can remain within your duty limits. So pilots really need to take on that shared responsibility to make sure that they are operating within the rule sets.
Okay, great. Just like to add one further point to the very good point that Greg's just made. Remember, we have a current FSO that talks about exceeding flight and duty limits. Make sure you're familiar with that, because you could find yourself in a situation because of those ground delays where you are no longer legal to finish that duty. Everybody tried, but you just couldn't get the aeroplane away in that fourth sector and you're going to exceed the limits. You cannot depart in that situation. So find that FSO, make sure you're familiar with the rules around exceeding flight and duty limits.
Excellent. Now, I know we've talked in the previous podcast about how to submit an Intellex report or fatigue report following a duty where the crew member believed there was a fatigue issue with the sector or pattern. Now, as an aside, a link to APA's how-to guide to submit an Intellex fatigue report was included with the link to this podcast. So if you need to familiarise yourself with that document, please do. Thanks again to Shane and Greg for your time today. I know myself and our members appreciate your insights and expertise on this trippy subject. As always, we encourage you to provide feedback about other issues you would like tackled on both FRMS and other topics. We are keen to continue providing conversations on various aspects of FRMS as they arise, so please keep the feedback coming. In the meantime, fly safe and stick with it.